Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience. Brought to you by Mariner Sales, providing the largest selection of kayaks and kayak accessories since 1975. Real sportswear, get out on the water and wear what the guides wear. Galveston Redfish Series, the largest, most affordable redfish series on the Gulf Coast. Sign up today. Pure Fishing, home to the world's most trusted fishing brands. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle with your host, Drew Turner.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner, and this is another edition of the Paddler's Playbook, coming to you live from the Mariner Sales Studios. What is up, bro staff? It's been a whole week since I talked to you guys. Didn't get on the water this past weekend. It was Mother's Day weekend, so had to take care of the mothers in the family. Did some barbecue and some cleaning. Went and ate at the hibachi. Had some fun there. But I'm going to hopefully get on the water this weekend. We'll see. With all this weather, all this rain, been a little difficult to get out on the water. So I spent some time creating some content, went through a lot of old videos. There's a few reels out there. If you guys haven't already, check out the Paddler's Playbook on Facebook and on Instagram. I've been trying to post a lot of reels. I'm going to have some really cool reels coming up, working together with Yak Attack. They just released the Bar Cart, which is out, but they also have the Bunkster, which is coming out, and the Bunkster is a little more simplified version of the Bar Cart. It's a little bit smaller. The bunks, you're not able to change. There's a little less moving parts, so I'm actually going to get one of the Bunksters, and I'm going to try that sucker out, get some media with the new canoe, get that out. So make sure you guys are following the Paddler's Playbook on Instagram and Facebook to see all that stuff. And stay tuned, guys, because I am about to do I'm going to do a big giveaway. Let's do a big June, July giveaway in the next few months. And I think I'm going to run that through the Instagram. So make sure you follow the Paddler's Playbook on Instagram. And you're going to have a chance to win some prizes from the folks over there at Mariner Sales. But on this episode, guys, I'm joined by my man, Brian, and Brian is a freshwater hammer and a saltwater hammer and an offshore hammer and an inshore hammer. This dude is literally the fishiest person I know, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how he transitions back and forth between the two. We're going to talk about him running his guide service. We're going to talk about, you know, going from bass to redfish to, you know, sailfish offshore. We get into a lot of stuff in this episode. But before we get to all that, make sure to head over to Instagram, follow the Paddler's Playbook, and listen to Jess.
Hey, bro staff. Looking for the ultimate kayaking experience? Look no further than Mariner Sales, your go-to destination for new canoe kayaks. Their expert staff can help you find the perfect kayak to fit your needs and preferences. They offer a wide range of accessories to make your adventure even better. With new canoes, innovative modular design, and Mariner Sales exceptional customer service, you're guaranteed to have a kayaking experience like no other. So why wait? Visit them at Mariner Sales today and start your next adventure. Speaking of next adventure, Real Sportswear is introducing their Pro Plus hoodie, the ultimate performance hoodie for active lifestyle. Their hoodie is designed with moisture wicking technology to keep you dry and comfortable during even the most intense workouts. The lightweight, breathable fabric allows for a full range of motion, while the adjustable hood and thumb holes provide added warmth and protection from the elements. And with this sleek, modern design, the Pro Plus hoodie looks as good as it performs. Don't settle for ordinary gear. Upgrade to the Pro Plus hoodie from Real Sportswear today. All right, bro staff, mark your calendars for June 10th. It's time for the Galveston Redfish Series Event 3. This exciting tournament is your chance to compete against some of the best anglers in the region and show off your skills on the beautiful waters of Galveston Bay. With cash prizes and bragging rights on the line, it's an event that you don't want to miss. And with their commitment to responsible angling practices and conservation, you can feel good about supporting a cause while doing what you love. So sign up today for Galveston Redfish Series Event 3 and get ready for an unforgettable day on the water. That's it for me, bro staff. I'm Saltside Jess, and I'll see you on the Salt Side.
Thank you so much, Jess, for all of the info from everyone down at Mariner Sales and Galveston Redfish Series and Real Sportswear. Guys, we got a special guest on the show tonight, and there's not a lot of people that I am envious of in the fishing industry, but this man is one of the people I am very envious of because he is one of the fishiest human beings on this planet. When I say fishiest human beings, he's catching sailfish. He's placing in Hobie tournaments. He's placing in BASS. He's catching peacock bass. He's catching gator trout. Like, Brian, my man, welcome to the show. You definitely are one of the fishiest people I know or follow on social media or anything. And you don't even have to wear a bikini to get attention with all those fish that you're catching.
Yeah, you don't want to see that. But so, no, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So what? Tell me a little bit about. I want to know where it all started because I was looking at your Facebook earlier, and I saw you're in Florida now. Mm-hmm. But did you grow up in Florida? Where did you grow up?
No, I grew up in like the northwest suburbs of Chicago. So that's where fishing started. My dad took me out when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and fishing since then.
I mean, have you always had just a knack for catching fish, even since you were younger?
No, I mean, I'd fished some when I was younger. We'd have some trips. We'd go to Minnesota and fish, but I didn't fish a lot, you know, until pretty much when I started making trips to Florida. You know, we'd come as a family for a couple of weeks, and you know, the main goal during those trips was to fish the whole time. You know, back home we just fished mainly the local lakes and ponds and rivers and stuff. We'd fish the Fox River a lot, and you know, the fishing really passion, like where I wanted to do it every day, didn't start till I moved to Florida, you know.
And fishing. what kind of fish were you catching in the Fox River up there with your family?
Smallmouth, you know.
Smallmouth.
And we, you know, as a kid, you're catching carp and stuff too, because they're fun and big to fight. So,
and then when you went to Florida, what kind of fish were you guys catching on these family trips?
We, you know, we didn't really do anything besides land-based stuff. So we're fishing for whatever we could around on the beaches and bridges and stuff. So mainly snook. Snook. I remember catching a big cobia one time, which was random. And you know, sometimes we'd get Spanish mackerel and things like that. My dad wasn't a very technical fisherman, you know. He'd throw you a weight and a hook and some squid and put it out there, and that's his, it's, you know, to the extent of what he went to into fishing.
But you had a fish finder rig on there. You just had a weight on the bottom, two hooks coming off, and whatever live or dead bait you could throw on there.
Right. Yeah. He just, the easiest way to get us out there fishing and hopefully catch something.
Nice, man. So you said it didn't really start transitioning how much you fished until you started going to Florida a lot, and then you moved to Florida. Was the moving to the Florida area to pursue fishing, or what made you move down to the area?
I always wanted to move to Florida, not necessarily anywhere in particular. You know, we always vacation on the west coast of Florida in like the Tampa Bay area. And I was in college at the time, and I needed to do an internship to complete my my college career. And my advisor, I asked if she knew anybody in Florida, and they had someone that had graduated from Illinois State, is where I graduated from, and someone in West Palm Beach that was currently working in West Palm Beach in the field that I was studying, and then they got me an internship there, and then I did that for a summer, and then I got offered a full-time job right after that, and I just never went back home.
Oh, man. Well, I wouldn't either. Yeah. I mean, honestly, going from, you know, north of Chicago down to West Palm Beach, I mean, that's a pretty big difference and more opportunity for someone who really, really loves fishing. Was there more opportunity for your degree as well in the area, or were you just like, this is nice, I'll figure it out?
No, I wouldn't say there's more opportunity. I mean, there's more things you could spin into. I graduated with a degree in Parks and Recreation Administration. So obviously more year-round activities, outdoor recreation, you can do in Florida more so than up north.
All right, so I got to ask you, like, the same questions I ask everybody that comes on this show. So you kind of talked about how you got into fishing with your family and everything. So I got two other questions for you. I want to know, you know, what your very first fishing kayak was, or kayak period was, and then what one of your most memorable fishing memories is.
So the first kayak I had, I borrowed from my boss at West Palm Beach, and it was like a 10-foot sit on top. Like, I couldn't even tell you what the name brand of it was, but it got me off the shore and into the water, and that's what I wanted. So I started with that, and then I went to like an inflatable that I borrowed from another friend, and then eventually bought a Hobie, but it, you know, it was a Hobie Quest, so the paddle at that time. So that a Hobie was actually my first real kayak, and then again, eventually went to the pedals, and I've been using a Hobie since then.
How long ago was that you started kayak fishing? Because you've been in the game a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably 2006, I would say. Yeah.
I was going to say, probably about the same time I got my first kayak, around 2006, 2007. It was a Ocean Kayak Scrambler XL, and back then it was the Angler Edition, which meant it had two flush mount rod holders. Like, that's right. It. That's all the Angler Edition meant on any kayak, was it had two rod holders there in the back.
Yeah, back then you had to make everything yourself, your rod holders and crates and all that stuff.
Oh, so yeah. People taking milk crates and zip tie and PVC, you know, to make you some rod holders and rocket launchers out of $27 worth of tees and angles and everything from Home Depot to make rocket launchers and everything hanging off of there. There were some like metal, people were screwing metal rod holders onto their boats that like were meant for the side of John boats and stuff like that. But there wasn't no Yak Attack or anything back then. I mean, I think Yak Attack came about like really 2010. Luther's been on the show to talk about it. But same thing with Yak Gear and everything else. It was mid-2000, like teens is when everything popped off with all the accessories and things like that.
Yep.
But all right, what about your most memorable fishing memory?
I mean, it's a lot of the, especially when I started going offshore kayak fishing. I mean, I remember a lot of that stuff. Like my first big tuna, my first sailfish. And then obviously some of the tournament wins are memorable, but I couldn't really say like one specific thing that like, you know, sticks in my mind. You know, just a lot of the first times of doing something, I always remember those.
Now the tuna that you're talking about, like how big tuna are we talking about that you're catching from the kayak?
We have blackfin tuna here mainly. We randomly do get yellowfin, but it's very super rare. But yeah, our blackfin top end, you know, 40 pounder is like not very common. Like the big one I caught was like 35 pounds. So generally a big blackfin tuna is 35 pounds.
But those things are so fast. Like,
yeah.
They're missiles. Like you literally see them and in your head, like the sound effects go off and it just goes, like when you see them going crazy or hitting bait or anything. That is the fastest fish that I've ever seen swimming. Like, the first time I saw it, I didn't know what happened. And the guy I was with was like, oh, dude, that was a blackfin. And I was like, how could you see it? It looked like just a speck, like, shot off from under the bait ball. I had no clue what the heck that was, man.
Yeah.
But you're running charters as well. How long have you been running charters?
Since 2009. So it's, what is that now? 14.
Ooh, that's 14 years, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
14 years with pushing waters.
Getting old.
Oh, man. I don't know if you're getting old. You've been doing it a while. You've been.
Yeah.
And you know, we're talking about these huge sailfish that you're catching, talking about blackfin tuna. But you also were just, you placed second in the Hobie BOS on Seminole this past weekend. It just goes to say, like, in my little intro where I talked about you were one of the fishiest son of bitches I'd freaking see, man. Like, you are a fishy, fishy, fishy dude. I mean, what do you eat for breakfast? Like, is there something I need to be eating for breakfast to get me more fishy? What can you attribute some of your success on finding fish are? I mean, are you one that just studies, or do you fish a lot off of instincts? I mean, do you just have, is it a little bit of both?
No, I mean, with the bass stuff, obviously I didn't just jump into it and was successful. The first 2 years I tried to do the trail series, I jumped on Hobie at first. I failed miserably. Like, I didn't even catch fish at these tournaments. So you learn, you know, eventually you learn that what you're doing, you know, is not working and you just got to try something else. Obviously, you know, I do some map study and stuff, but I always say that the best thing you can do is time on the water. So you put the time in and eventually you start to figure things out. Things start clicking. And then, yeah, once you kind of realize what works and what's worked here and what's worked there and what this setup and this kind of, you know, how these fish set up on these areas and this kind of lake and this time of year, you just start applying that to wherever you go. You know, and again, it's just the more experience on the water you can get, the better. You know, there's always, and I always see a lot of people, you know, with all the internet and the Facebook groups and things and like that, people always want to be just like given information. You see people all the time asking like, what should I do here and this and that, and it's like, just get on the water and try things. You know, that's how you're going to figure things out.
Figure it out, like, by trial and error.
Right.
Like, put the bait in front of the fish. Now, are you using a lot of electronics in either one when you're doing saltwater or freshwater? Are you using forward facing in either one?
No. You know, I might expand into that for the bass fishing thing in next year. You know, but I like fishing shallow. I mean, I would like to have, you know, the knowledge of that. And if I need to apply that, I can use that. But I enjoy fishing shallow. It's working for me. You know, and that was one of the biggest things, too, that in the beginning I tried to do what worked for other people in the bass tournaments. And like, say you show up to a lake and people at the tackle shop saying, oh, they're crushing them on this and this and that, and it's not something that I normally do. I'd, you know, start buying those lures and try to do what they did, and it didn't work. So once I just stuck to what I like to do, like from basically inshore saltwater fishing shallow grass and points and current edges and seams, and that once I just stuck to those kind of things, it started to click for me.
So that was going to be one of my next questions. Is it was surprising to me that you like to fish shallow because of your experience offshore fishing.
Then
it's not surprising because you're also running, you're running charters and you're fishing a lot in the shallow grass and, you know, some of the inland stuff for inshore species. So I'm sure there's a lot of carryover between the two, between fishing shallow like you do now. Are you using the same type of baits in both? Have you taken some saltwater baits and you're like, okay, I'm just going to throw this. It's a fish on a point in 3 foot of water. It's the same thing in both.
For sure. And you know, when I first came down to Florida and trying to transition to the, obviously when I first started fishing, it was mainly inshore fishing, inshore salt. And, you know, a lot of the bass lures transfer over. And it's the same thing if you started in saltwater and can transfer over to freshwater. Of course, I had major success at the TOC and this last year at the Hobie TOC with using a saltwater topwater lure that a lot of people didn't even heard of before. So it's just stuff that I have already that I, you know, I've already used and I use all the time. I mean, of course, you got a lot of saltwater stuff, you know, flukes and you know, some other stuff like that. It's like, just obviously it works in the bass fishing world as well. So you don't need to go out and buy a bunch of that. And that was the weirdest thing too, is going into the bass stuff, and all these guys have, you know, every little different color and, you know, of every lure. And it's like, to me, that just doesn't make sense. Like, you don't need all that. So
it's glad to have another guy who fishes inshore and stuff with me, because I've did a few episodes lately with bass guys. And like, I love Vinny. Vinny was on the last episode. I love him to death. But he was convinced that the reason he was catching fish in the area that he was fishing was because he was using a custom color on his soft plastic. And look, if that's what gets you the confidence to get it out there and catch that fish, great. But on my bait wall in there, I've got white and chartreuse, new penny and chartreuse, and like a black and or morning glory and chartreuse. I just have a light, a medium, and a really dark. And I'm throwing those all the time. Even when I find myself bass fishing, I'm throwing like a black, a green pumpkin, and then something really light with a chartreuse tail.
Right, exactly. I'll even simplify it down even more than that. Just do a light and a dark.
Light and dark all the time. Yeah. So you were talking about that most guys hadn't talked about. Are you willing to give a little juice on what that was? What kind of top water that was?
Oh, I've already said it. It's a bomber badonkadonk.
Oh yeah, those are some loud baits too.
Yeah. So that in that tournament, it definitely seemed to be that they were liking the noise that one made, or the profile of it, compared to, because I had Nolan Miner sitting next to me throwing another different top water, and he wasn't getting bit, you know, half the time that I was. So.
And that's a big bait, like that badonkadonk. That's a large profile top water too.
Yeah, they're feeding on gizzard shad at the time, so.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense. So with your offshore charters, though, like how did that start? I mean, because it's one thing to transition to a kayak to inshore fishing and going after snook, and, you know, stuff sets up pretty similar to bass fishing. I mean, you got water flowing this way, you've got a break there, you may have some bait fish coming through here. That's completely different than catching a sailfish offshore, isn't it? Or am I just ignorant to the way the sailfish work and find that?
Yeah. No, again, going into the bass tournament stuff and just bass fishing in general is way harder than offshore fishing. So you may think it's more difficult to figure it out there, but the figuring out bass in different times of year in different lakes is way harder than it is being out there offshore catching a sailfish or mahi or tuna. Now, offshore is more, you know, we're generally fishing somewhat the same areas. We'll bounce around from, you know, we'll fish a little further north or south of, you know, some areas during different times of the year. But typically, you know, it's just the conditions change out there all the time. That the bottom structure is always the same, but currents and structure, as in, you know, weeds and stuff, floating debris and things like that, change all the time. So the amount of bait coming through, the water temps, a lot of the things that change like that. But it's not going and finding, you know, fishing a whole new bottom structure and a whole new, you know, a 100-foot deep lake compared to a, you know, real shallow 10-foot.
Different, yeah, lake. You almost said it, a completely different ecosystem.
Right. So,
I mean, on your offshore trips, though, you're mainly focusing in on structure you know is there. You got a couple areas with good structure that you know usually will hold fish.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, depending on what we're doing, you know, if we're looking for the pelagics, we're trolling live baits. We used to troll a lot of plugs, but it is more difficult for clients that aren't used to. I get a lot of clients that have never been in a kayak and or fish before, so trying to get them to pedal nonstop throwing a plug doesn't really work. So we use live bait. It works much better, and it's easier on the clients because they don't have to pedal as much. But yeah, we're trolling over, you know, live reef and ledges, and there's, you know, some structure of shipwrecks and things out there. And then once you're out there, you're looking for, like I said, those current seams and any kind of weeds floating, and then kind of focus in on where you're getting bit and stay in that area.
That's kind of surprising to me that you have a number of clients that have never kayaked or kayak fished that's out there trying to catch sailfish and everything in the ocean in a plastic boat, and they've never done it before. I mean, I just can't imagine going, hey, you know what we want to do today? Let's go try to catch a giant fish from something I've never been in out in the ocean. Like, let's do that today. That just seems odd to me.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I get people all the time that it might be someone drag them along with the group sometimes. But, yeah, I get people a lot that, one, have never fished, or maybe they've fished it, but they never kayak fished. And then a lot of times they've never done either. So
do they get there and they're just like, oh, wow, there's pedals. I didn't know we were going to have pedals in this thing.
All the time.
That's what's crazy about working some of these demos is I know I'm not going to sell a boat to somebody when they come to the demos and they just go, I want to try one with the pedals. Like, just any of them with the pedals in it. It's like, hey, I ain't selling a boat today to them. They do not want to buy anything that has to do with this boat. They just want to come out and try it and just try it once. Now, you've mentioned a few times already that bass fishing has been much harder than offshore fishing. Do you consider it harder than inshore fishing as well? Or more challenging to you?
Yeah, because I used to do a lot of inshore salt tournaments before the offshore thing kind of took off. There's obviously it's different ecosystems and different setups in different parts of the country, even for saltwater. But I still feel they set up this a lot similar, even though no matter where you go, if you kind of look at a map and, you know, see where the, you know, the points and current and stuff and like that, you know, the grass flats and things, they'll set up very similar. So again, it's the challenge. I give big props to the guys that can go to any bass lake and figure it out every time. And there's a lot of guys on the trails that can do that. And I'm just trying to keep up with them, you know, and try to start figuring it out, which, you know, this year, I think I'm starting to get the hang of it, and hopefully even more so in the coming years.
So how many bass tournaments have you fished this year?
So I did 4 Hobies and 2 Bassmaster. And I was just saying this earlier to my wife. I think I got 4th in the Bass Classic, Kayak Classic.
And you got a 9th in there.
Yeah, so I did 6 tournaments. And I got 3 top 10s. So
that's pretty good. That's pretty good for a salt guy. Yeah. Like for traditional salt guy, that's pretty awesome. Now, when you say that you were doing inshore tournaments, what type of tournaments were you doing? Was it redfish? Was it trout? Or was it just kind of a mixed bag of everything? Because I'm a mainly redfish show, so I love talking redfish.
Yeah, they used to have a trail that was called the IFA, International Fishing Association, which I'm sure you saw by you. That was redfish and trout. And then a lot of the besides that is being like the one like trail, that everything else is like charity tournaments. So they would be red, snook, and trout generally, you know, so you're looking for this 3-fish slam.
So a few people have said that redfish are just like bass. They're just bigger and dumber. Would you agree with that? Is that a true statement?
They're definitely dumber. Yeah, I don't know about them being the same. You could compare it somewhat. I think redfish, especially in certain parts of the country, that's just like Louisiana, it's just stupid fishing, you know. They're very dumb there. So in my area now, redfish have been harder to come by, so it's a little they're less of them, so it's a little harder to figure them out sometimes.
Yeah, you guys can't even keep any redfish down in your area anymore, can you?
No, we're I'm on the East Coast, so West Coast I still think has them off limits because of red tide, but we are allowed to still on our side.
It's just one fish, right? You can only keep one.
I believe so. I haven't kept I don't really keep inshore fish. We let them go. So
those are the best eating ones, though, man.
Yeah, we're trying to, you know, our habitat's been destroyed by a lot of the big sugar pollution. So, you know, we're trying to, at least I'm trying to, when we fish for them, we let them go.
Are you guys seeing a change in some of the legislation and stuff down there? Or, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a fight for a while.
Yeah.
Are you guys starting to see a turn in, you know, some help from just the state of Florida or CCA or anybody?
There's progress, but it's, I mean, it's going to take a long time. And it's going to, even after once that's, you know, done and protected and things can start getting better, it's going to take a long time to get better. So it's a long fight
for them to come and, you know, everything to be boosted back up. And you guys are dealing with so much runoff. Like, it's just crazy the amount of runoff that's killing some of these fish that's down there.
Yeah.
So what is the hardest part about transitioning to bass? Is it just the different ecosystems that you're fishing?
Yeah, I mean, again, I much prefer showing up to a shallow grass lake. I feel like I can figure that out a lot quicker than some of these deeper rocky lakes. I feel that in a saltwater kind of situation, no matter the time of year, they're generally still going to be kind of in the same areas, you know, unless they're going to spawn offshore or whatnot. But throughout the year, I feel a red trout, snook, or basically in the same areas they are for the most part. So I've found that to be very different with bass. They're not like, I can show up to a lake at a different time, a different month, even a different week, and they're not there. They're going to be somewhere else. So
now what, whenever you're bass fishing, you just talked about top waters. When you're fishing in shallower water, what are some of your favorite types of baits to use for both, you know, inshore and bass?
I mean, if I can use top water all day, I'm going to. I mean, I love it, even though I hate it in a tournament because I do lose fish.
I was going to say, there's a lot of tournament fishermen that are like, save the top water for scouting days.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get a lot of blowups and you're not going to catch all those fish and you're going to be frustrated.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm willing to roll the dice because I enjoy it.
Are you one that when you're fishing those grass flats, you put the inline hooks on there? Or are you still rolling with the trebles?
No, yeah, I use trebles. Yeah. I want it, if they just slash at it, I want it to grab them. So
you
want
to be able to get them right there in the gill plate or something like that?
Yeah, I want it to grab something because they're not always going to commit fully. So,
well, are you throwing a lot of chatter baits or paddle tails or jerk baits? Or, I mean, you don't have to tell us exactly what you're throwing, but I mean,
bass-wise, I'll tell you straight up, my top three is going to be a topwater walking bait. If I can't throw something with trebles for topwater, I'm going to throw a buzz frog, you know, if it's a matted-out grass area. And then a chatterbait and a speedworm. I mean, those are going to be my first three, and then I'll kind of go from there.
So what other tournaments you got going on this year? What is on your agenda for the rest of the year? Are you fishing the rest of the Hobie tournaments? You got some bass tournaments coming on. What's on your travel schedule? Because we've been trying to set this up for a little while, but man, you are a busy, busy dude with soccer and, you know, all the travel, and I'm sure with charters, you are always on the go.
Yeah. So no, I'm done with the bass until, well, I have a Team USA event the first week of June, and then after that, I'm just doing charters, so I'm going to be home, and then nothing until the fall, like you know, for like the TOC. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I didn't qualify for the Bassmaster Classic one yet, so I qualified for the Georgia State Championship. I got to go back up to Seminole, hopefully do well again and qualify for the Bassmaster end of the year one. So again, I won't be doing any, besides June, I won't be doing any more bass stuff till maybe probably even November, maybe one in September if I feel like it, but might not be till November.
You're gonna have to do a little bit of pre-fishing then. If you haven't fished that long, you're talking about finding them in different parts of the lake. There's a big difference between where they're at in April and when they're at in November.
Too much pre-fishing can mess you up too, though. But I definitely, for the Hobie TOC, I'm probably gonna go up to Chickamauga before the off limits and try to get up there again a little more in the fall, like September time, October. I don't know when the off limits is. Probably a month out. But yeah, I'll probably go up there once just to look at more of the lake, because I'd only been to Chickamauga the one time for the Bassmaster Classic one.
So explain that too much pre-fishing can mess you up, because on one hand, earlier in the show, you said that you need to spend as much time in the water as yeah. possible. And I know that it's different, but some people who may be listening to this show that haven't, like, because I have a lot of listeners, or I just had one text me the other day, how do I get into tournament fishing? How do I do this? So we have a lot of beginners that listen to this, so they may listen to you at the beginning, and you're like, well, he said spend as much time on the water as you can, but now he's saying I shouldn't pre-fish as much. Like, kind of explain, because I'm with you. I only want to pre-fish, like, one day a week and a half before the tournament, and I don't want to fish too much because I don't want to overthink it.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. So to understand, like, again, if you're trying to get into just fishing or you're switching from salt to bass, get on the water and try things out. Now, I'm saying before a tournament, I don't want to have 5 days before a tournament and then I caught fish here on this and I caught fish over there on this. And then you got like five different options where you go. And then you're like, I don't know what to do. Like, what now? I got to make a decision. So like for me, I typically like 3 days of practice before the bass tournament. If I've been to the lake before, I'm trying to cut it down to 2 days just again, so I don't have so many options. I just want to hit a few places that I've, you know, been to before. And hopefully those things work out, especially if it's the same time of year. So again, in relation to putting time on the water before tournament, I don't want too much pre-fishing.
Now, whenever you are doing this pre-fishing and you are checking those spots, are you catching one fish moving on, two fish moving on, three fish moving on? Like, you don't want to sore lip them in your areas. Like, yeah. What's kind of that sweet spot for you as far as, okay, I'm going to go pluck two out of there and then, okay, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Yeah, typically I want to catch two. I mean, not even catch. My top waters, I take hooks off. I'll run my speed worm without a hook. I'll usually throw a buzz frog without a hook on it, just run it to see if I can get a blow up on it. I don't want to catch fish pre-fish. I just want to find fish. So, and yeah, if I get one or two blow ups, I'm like, okay, there's something going on here, and then I can leave it alone. So,
that's not hard for you. Like, I would go crazy
to be able to smack them because I want to set the hook.
Oh gosh, like that would drive me nuts having something blow up on my bait out there and I don't even get to set the hook. Yeah. Like, I mean,
it's all in preparation. What's more important is winning the tournament. So
that's true. I could see that cashing the check is more important than that 3 minutes of glory that you get whenever you hook one on that top water. I could see that. I haven't got to that point in my fishing career that I'm okay with that. Like, I still want to hammer them. That's probably why I don't pre-fish too much, because I still want to hammer the fish. Like, I'm that mad at them still whenever I go out that I want to catch as many as I can in the short amount of time that I can. But I guess getting to a point where you're cashing $8,000, $10,000, $3,000 checks, like, that may change your mind a little bit about throwing a buzz frog out there without a hook on it. Like, I could see that. So tell us if someone wants to find you, if someone wants to book a charter with you, where can they do that? Because like I said, you are the fishiest person that I follow on social media or have talked to, with just the number of species that, well, before that, I got one more question. So yeah. You do freshwater charters, you do saltwater charters, you do offshore charters. What are most of your charters throughout the year? I know it's going to depend on the time of year, but the majority of your charters are what type of charters?
The offshore fishing. People want, majority of the requests are catching the sailfish. So I'd say 65-70% is an offshore charter through the year. We do have weather issues typically in the wintertime where we can't get out there. So we do a lot of the inshore kind of stuff during that time.
Now, what if you had to give it a percentage? Well, actually, so are people booking just one day with you? Are they usually booking multiple days to make sure they can have a chance at that sailfish?
Depends. It ranges. I'll have 1 day, 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
Depends on the person. You know, I get a lot of people that are just here for a conference or, you know, they're doing something where they're only going to be able to stop in for a day. But then I got other people that are coming specifically to fish with me. So they'll do 2 or 3 days.
There you go. So what percentage of people who want to catch a sailfish have the opportunity to catch a sailfish from the kayak? Well, I mean, all of them have the opportunity, but how many are you taking their picture if you had to give it? Because us fishermen who do it all the time, we're like, okay, I'm booking this charter. I know there's a probability that today we're not going to catch a shellfish, but I want to go out and experience that. Like, what if I wanted to come fishing with you, what would you give me as a percentage that I would be able to get a sailfish in?
It depends on the time of year. You know, it's I can give you percentage on if you're going to get a bite. I'm not going to give you percentage on if you're going to be able to land it. So,
okay. Well, so just a bite. Yeah. Just a bite.
Yeah. Now, typically, you know, we're going to get rushes. We'll have like 2 weeks where it's sailfish all the time. And then we might get a week lull. And then they'll be back again for another couple weeks. So it really varies. But, you know, I would say, again, it depends on the time of year. But I don't know. I'd say 70%, you know, it's pretty high.
Yeah, that's a good probability.
Yeah, it's high probability that you'd get a sailfish bite. So
now our down here, the only like really big fish we have is tarpon. We don't, I mean, there's been a sailfish caught out of Texas, but I only know one person that's ever caught one from a kayak, and that's Chris Castro down in Corpus. Yeah. He got a sailfish there. Now, do sailfish migrate, or are they normally, because I know the tarpon will migrate down the coast, and then they go down to Mexico for the winter, and then they'll kind of come back up the Texas coast. Are sailfish kind of the same way, or do they stay in certain areas all year long?
We have them year long, but they definitely do migrate. You know, we'll get a push of them in the wintertime. And typically you'll hear boaters talking about sailfish season being in the winter when we get these, you know, strong north, northeast winds that'll push fish down from the north. But they're always moving, but there's always sailfish around. So they're not necessarily like, oh, you know, they migrated out of here already. Like say, for instance, our tuna typically aren't here during the wintertime. They start coming in this time of year, and then they'll stick around through the fall, and they'll start making their way out of here. So, but the sailfish, we'll catch them again. We'll catch it in January, we'll catch it in May, we'll catch it in October. There's always some around.
I got you. So if somebody wants to come book a trip with you, how do they do it? And don't you offer like a full all-inclusive package for a certain number of people?
Yeah, we do. We call them week-long trips. So we have people come in, stay at a house that we have on the water. We try to do offshore fishing for that time, you know, depending on the weather, but typically in the summer, the weather's pretty good. And yeah, we do that. Everything is included. It's pretty much try to make that as all inclusive as possible. Gets, you know, pay the one fee and get to stay at the house. We take you out, pretty much provide everything. You don't need to rent anything. You don't need to bring anything. It's pretty much sign up and, we take care of the rest for you. And then we do those in the summer, doing 3 weeks this year, and we've sold those all out. We typically sell them out every year. We do 3 or 4 weeks every summer.
Yeah, and you guys sell those out pretty fast. It's usually like right after Christmas, like those things are gone, aren't they?
Yeah, typically, usually March is, you know, people start getting refunds and stuff. And I think that's when they start coming and signing up.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to book a trip, where do they go?
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, send a message. You can Google Pushing Water Kayak Charters. My website's actually tckayakfishing.com. But if you just Google Pushing Water and or look us up on Instagram, send a message. I'm pretty responsive on there.
So why is it TC? I noticed that when I looked it up. Is it a website that someone owned before you, or did you have a different name?
No, so when I first started, I lived like 45 minutes north of here. And when I started my charter business, we did mainly all inshore fishing. And then I moved further south where we could do the offshore and the peacock bass stuff. So at the time where I lived, it was called the Treasure Coast. So I did kayak fishing. So, you know, when I first started the business, it was, you know, we wanted to make sure we had kayak fishing in the website domain. So that's how we did that.
Oh, yeah, because there's like 20 different coasts on. Well, yeah. It's not 20. It's like eight. You got like the Treasure Coast, the Lost Coast, Emerald Coast, Space Coast, Coast to Coast. Like there's all kinds of different coasts there. Well, I want to know one more question since you brought it up and you were talking about when you transitioned to being a full-time guide. What did that look like for you transitioning from, were you working before, like a regular 9-to-5, or had you always kind of part-timed doing guides and it was just, man, I can make a living out of this. Like I'm good enough that I can do this.
No, yeah, I worked, again, I did that internship and I got a job. I worked full-time for 4 or 5 years. And then I lost my job. And I at the time, I was starting to win some tournaments and get some notoriety. And people were asking me to take them fishing. And I kind of was doing that on the side. And then I said, I'm going to really try to pursue this. And I worked at, like, after I lost my job, I just said, screw it. And I started doing the charters. And I got a part-time job working at Gander Mountain. I'd worked there for probably 3 or 4 years, and I did the guiding thing for part-time, probably for that time, about 4 years. And then I decided to just jump into it full-time. It was tough in the beginning, you know, and at that time, kayak fishing still wasn't like a huge thing. So we kind of had to build the, you know, the following and showing what we can do down here. So then people started noticing, and it's been good ever since then.
I like how you just so smoothly just said it's kind of hard for those 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
like,
it was
probably really difficult for those 3 or 4 years. I mean, you seem like a pretty even keel guy, nice and calm with everything you're saying, but some people think that they're just gonna, like, oh, I'm gonna just go be a guide and I'm gonna automatically make just as much money or more money than I made at my 9-to-5 job. That's not the case. Like, you've got to work your ass off to get your name out there enough to where you can make a living out of it. Is that correct?
For sure. Yeah. There's been people that pop up and they try to do it. I've probably 4 or 5 different people that have tried to do the kayak fishing charter thing, and they haven't survived. So it's, I think it's one part of it is being one of the first doing it that helped and got a following going, but it's hard. You got to put a lot of effort into it.
So do you think it's more of, you grew the business big enough where you have your name out there, that's why it's sustainable? Or do you think it's just, well, I guess it's probably both. You know, you've grown it enough to make it sustainable. You're out there in the kayak fishing community. Heck, you're on a show with a guy from Texas that, like, we've never met. We don't even fish the same waters, and I know what you placed at the last Hobie tournament and at the bass tournament. I know about the week long trips and everything like that. Is it just getting your name out there? Was that the hardest part about the whole thing, or was it being consistent and finding the fish? Like, did you consistently find fish fairly easily, or was that something that you really worked hard at?
Yeah, I mean, it's more about getting the name out. I mean, obviously, people aren't going to come back if they're not catching fish. So having, you know, good repeat client base is essential. You know, it's having that consistency. I was winning tournaments and people were seeing that. And then I was doing YouTube a lot and social media, and people noticed that stuff, and, you know, was consistently posting stuff. So, again, you get somewhat of a following, and word of mouth is huge, but, you know, obviously social media has been a big part of it, and Google. If you get those things right, and, you know, eventually people will start coming in. Again, it's like, I get a lot of those people that know me from seeing me on social media and or, you know, heard of me at the tournament or something. But then there's people that just type in Google and they're like, what to do in Palm Beach County, or what's there to do for fun? And then they find me in that way. So it's a mixture of different things.
Awesome, man. So you provide everything. You have the Hobies. What's a normal trip cost? If I'm gonna book you for one day, I'm down there and I want to go try to catch a sailfish. And then what is the best time of year to book a trip to go try to catch a sailfish?
Best time is typically mid-April through July. August can be good sometimes. Some of the times in the fall is good as well. An offshore trip is going to run $400 for the first person and $180 for the second and or the third. Each additional 180. So I take up to three people on a normal single day trip just for safety reasons. And that includes everything. You don't need to bring anything. I got rods, reels, the kayak, safety equipment, and then it also includes live bait, which is a big expense for us down here. If you didn't, most people don't understand that. Catching bait ourselves for the kayak is, you know, I don't want to take people out there and spend 2-3 hours trying to catch bait, wasting their day. So we just buy bait and get out there as soon as possible. So typically our, you know, the first 3 hours of the day is going to be the best time. So.
Oh yeah. I can just imagine handing someone who's never fished before or never kayaked before and giving them sabiki rig and saying, all right, we're going to go catch bait. We're going to be over here for 2 hours. I bet they are not very happy about doing stuff like that if they had to.
Not happening.
But I mean, if you're going out with someone that's your buddy, I mean, $600 for a full day, that's not a bad price at all.
Yeah.
Now, are most of your kayaks, are you out there in Outbacks or what are you in?
Yeah, we use Outbacks. For clients, I have the older model Outbacks. I like those better. In my opinion, they're the best all around kayak you can have.
Just the whole shape and everything about them.
Yeah, the weight. It's not miserable trying to drag it up and down the beach. And they handle the surf well. And I've always liked the older ones. I enjoy the newer ones as well. But for client use, I like those old ones.
So I keep saying it's the last question, but you keep bringing things up. I'm just imagining people coming in and doing reentry. In their kayaks, are you having them coming backwards? Are you having them going forwards? How often are they dumping these kayaks? Do you just take? You're like, okay, give me all your rods before we get to the breakers, and I'm gonna put them in my kayak because I'm pretty sure that you are going to flip on reentry.
Yep, everything goes with me. So if I dump, it's my fault. So yeah, when it's rough, again, people are gonna dump in the surf. I'm not ashamed to say I've dumped in the surf, but it's been probably a year or two since I've done that, but it still happens if you're not paying attention. But yeah, I take everything, have them, you know, tie the drive off and, you know, if they got anything extra with them, make sure it goes in the hatch. But people, you know, if it's rough, they do flip, you know, but we're there to help them up and get them back to the beach safe.
There you go. So do you go in first and then wait for them to come in? That makes the most sense instead of standing back there looking.
No, if it's rough, I'll get them all prepared, pull their drives out, and they're going to paddle in. And they're going to go forward. We're not going to go backwards. It's more confusing for somebody. Be like, I don't understand what you're talking about. So we have them paddle in forward. And, of course, you know, we try to tell them to go slow. And if you catch a wave, try to back paddle. Again, most of these people, even after explaining how to do that, they don't understand. But, again, we try to coach them as much as possible. I'll go in first and get in the water and get to our point where I can kind of try to grab them so they don't dump. But, you know, it happens, but it's part of the experience sometimes.
Oh, if there's people on the beach, I bet they love seeing you come back in. They're like, oh, this is going to be fun. Somebody grab a beer, kick your feet up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Before we get out of here, is there any sponsors you want to thank? Anybody you want to give a shout out to? I know we've talked about your guide service quite a bit here, but is there anybody else you want to thank? The floor is yours for like the next 5 minutes just to think or talk about anybody or anything that you want to plug.
Yeah. No, my wife's been essential in helping me get the business started. She was actually the one that pushed me to start going full time. So she's always been a support to me. Hobie Fishing. I've been with Hobie for, again, I've had a Hobie for since I started, basically. So they've always helped me out. DOA Lures, Dakota Lithium, Yozuri, Eagle Claw. I mean, there's a list of people. South River Outfitters, he's huge. He's my local Hobie dealer. He's helped me so much in the last few years, give me everything I need to do these tournaments and or charters. I'm very good at breaking things, so he's also a wizard.
What type of rod and reels are you using?
Shimano, based mostly. I've gone back and forth from Shimano. The reels are Shimano. I got some pens. I had pens before, and I went to Shimano. I've kind of flip-flopped back and forth every now and then. But Crowder Rods is actually another one. They're a local company. I use their stuff for saltwater. I've actually started using some of the things, some spinning rods that they make for bass fishing as well. But, again, I have a mix of that stuff. But Shimano's been decent for me. They hold up pretty well.
Yeah, especially for those newbies that are They're holding their rod in the water while they're sitting there talking to you. They don't know any better.
Yeah, we try not to do that.
Man, I see some of the tourists down here at the beach. They'll literally put rod holders like out there in the first sandbar and then put their big, huge Walmart special rod and reel in there and just let the waves going over their reel and everything. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you guys are killing me right now. Like, even though that's like a $40 setup that already had line on it from Walmart, like, yeah. Why are you abusing fishing gear like that? Please don't abuse it. Don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, man, you got anything else before we get out of here? I don't want to take up too much of your time. We're rolling up on an hour.
No. I appreciate the invite. It's good to talk with you.
Awesome, man. And good luck on all your future tournaments. And just know that there is definitely someone out there that has a man crush on you and is very envious of all the fish that you catch. All right, guys, if you haven't already, make sure to follow the Paddler's Playbook on Instagram. Follow us on Facebook. If you need a Bro Staff fishing jersey, there are already some Bro Staff fishing jerseys out there in the world. I saw a few out in the wild at the Galveston Redfish Series. Go ahead and check those out. It's in the description of this episode. You can support the Patreon, you can find the Redfish Network there, and you can find the Bro Staff fishing jerseys. Brian, man, it was awesome having you on. It's time to get out of here. Peace!